Welcome to the Tech on Toast podcast. We are the home of hospitality tech. Whether you're an operator wanting to untangle your tech or a technology provider wanting to join our community, we are the largest hospitality tech growth platform on the planet. The Tech on Toast podcast is brought to you today by Lightspeed. Lightspeed is the EPOS and payments platform that will help you scale your business at the speed of light, trusted by over 170,000 businesses worldwide, including Big Mama, Mildred's, Mallow and Cubit House. Lightspeed seamlessly connects to an ecosystem of integrated solutions such as OpenTable, Xero, Muse and many more. Are you ready to take your hospitality business to the next level? With the Lightspeed unified platform, customers can shave seconds off each transaction and increase tips. Need a little support modernizing your tech stack? No problem. Want to scale your business? Get fast funding with Lightspeed Capital. No hidden fees or interest charges. Eligibility criteria and terms and fees apply. Get your demo today at www.lightspeedhq.co.uk/tech on toast. Now sit back and enjoy the show. Welcome to the next episode of Tech on Toast podcast. And this week, I'm delighted to be rejoined by founder and head hawk of DataHawks, Victoria Searle. How are you, Victoria?
I'm great.
It's the first time I ever calling you Victoria, for a start.
I know. Am I in trouble?
I don't know. Not yet. See what you say. How are you, Vic?
I'm brilliant. I mean, life is busy.
You look well.
Do you know you're the second person to say that to me this week? Does that mean I just look really crap before?
Well, I was saying to you just off air, I haven't seen you for like 25 years. So, yeah, I feel like it. But no, are things going well?
Things are going amazingly. I mean, Jesus God, it's just coming from all directions. But in a good way, right?
Well, I think you were episode like 4, 5, 6 maybe at the start of the Tech on Toast podcast, which is mental.
Yeah.
And you were just starting on your angry journey on DataHawks at that point. Are you still angry?
I'm still absolutely fuming, and even more so now I've hit menopause age. Couldn't
yeah, we've
be
got
more
the aircon on full whack here.
Thank you. Put it over. I was thinking this morning that I remember the last time we discussed and I managed to get menopause and warm glass of piss into the same sentence. So
good, I'm glad you've covered that straight away.
Yeah. I just did it again.
I feel like we've got nothing to talk about. And I will say, before we get into this, that actually you are the most talked about person on the Tech on Toast podcast, which is quite funny, because every time we talk about data, I've got like Vic's Tourette's. So every time someone says to me data, I'm like, Vixel! It just comes out my mouth. So, and I think it must be working, right? It must be me driving your business. Is that all it is?
100%. There's going to be a fat check in the post for you soon. But to be honest, nobody has a clue who I am, but everybody knows what T-Marketing is. And that's what's really driven it. I mean, there's nearly 600 people in that WhatsApp group that I started as a bit of a lockdown rescue.
We should explain that at the start, because I think it is really where it all started, isn't it? Because explain why you started it.
Yeah, do you know what? So I started the business right at the start of lockdown. And
well
there was
done.
This particular morning, I was just feeling a bit, I'd like, you know what it's like when you start a business? I'd had a solid
yes.
positive morning working. And then all afternoon, I just sat crying, going, what have I done? Like, what have I done? I could be on furlough now. What have I done? And I mentioned it because I'm a big believer in just sort of, you know, saying things as they are. And I mentioned it on LinkedIn. A couple of people messaged me and just said, feeling the same way, really tearful, don't know what's going on. So I added them to WhatsApp and I was like, this would be really nice. And the next thing I know, I started getting messages going, can I be in your crying group? And I was like, if you like. And it built incredibly quickly. It went from sort of like two people to, I don't know, 250 people. And then as lockdown sort of started to wind, I thought, oh, this will just disband now. Like, we don't need it anymore. And if anything, it got bigger and better, and there's now nearly 600 people in it. But do you know what? I think that group has changed how we do hospitality marketing. Because before that, if somebody said to you, you know, how's your Father's Day bookings? Everybody would be all like, oh, I'm not telling you. And it was all sort of secretive.
I totally agree.
Everybody's so collaborative and they just share stuff.
And it's weird because it's now out of your control, right?
Oh, it's nothing to do with me. I just turn up and add people.
Vic's like, here she is, bang.
Yeah, honestly.
Here's another 10, have that.
It's amazing. I mean, it's an absolute beast and it's nothing to do with me.
I think people are building business out of Vic. Genuinely, I think, I don't do a lot of business in there because I'm wary of spamming it. So I stay away, you know, share the occasional brunch. But there's a lot of guys in there in the marketing field who are basically driving their consultancies, driving whatever they're doing. I think it's amazing. And I encourage it. And I think you're right that people probably prior to the pandemic as well, didn't really like to share. And it was all very much, this is what we do and we can't tell anyone else. Well, guess what? They're doing the same thing.
100%.
So it's been powerful, right? And it's kind of built what DataHawks is, right? From the essence of it.
It kind of has and it hasn't, because I rarely talk about DataHawks in there. Like, I can barely get a word in, Chris.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I rarely do. But I suppose what it's done is it's put me in front of a lot of people that hadn't heard of me and therefore hadn't heard of DataHawks. So it's helped in that way. But do you know what? The amount of people that have got jobs through that the amount of people who have picked up business through that group. Yeah. And lots of people have said, you need to monetize it, you need to charge. And I'm like, no, because this is hospitality all over, isn't it? It's about relationships. Yeah. It's about the power.
We are the
community.
Weirdest industry ever. We don't charge anything.
We don't. We just keep doing shit for free, you know. But yeah, to me, it's just the absolute. You know, it's the best of hospitality. It's collaborative. It's helpful. It's supportive.
It's ace. I even mute it, right? Yeah. I even mute it just because there's so much going, because it's so busy. Yeah. But I'll go in there and I've almost, it's quite embarrassing. I'll literally like do a catch up, a week catch up just to check I haven't missed anything. But my team at Sarah, my ops director's in there now.
Yeah.
And she sent me last night. She goes, oh, Gordon Ramsay's filming for what's it called again? His show? I can't remember.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I saw it
come out last night.
Yeah.
And she was like, you should go on it. So I was like, yeah, it's Friday night in London. It's not happening.
No.
But yeah, it's been interesting.
Do you know what I love about it? What tells me it's just really sort of part of people's lives now is that on Christmas Day, people will post in it.
I know.
They could be doing anything anywhere.
I was reading it.
Exactly. And I'm sitting here reading it. People are posting and people are reading. So that says to me that group, especially if you know what hospitality marketing is like, sometimes you're the only person in the team and suddenly you've got a whole village, you know, and it's brilliant. So yeah, long may it continue. But
and for the people that don't know Data Hawks, especially people in WhatsApp groups, because they don't get to hear about it because you're too busy
just adding people.
Tell us what it does.
We're a data business, so it's around data-led insights, data-led action. So everything we do is rooted in the data, and we use the data to surface actionable insights from your data, and then we bring it to life with emotionally compelling email and SMS campaigns.
It's like you've done that before. That was impressive. No notes, nothing.
I swear to God, that's the first time
I've ever said that.
I'm right in the deck.
We'll cut that bit as a clip. That's perfect. And I was talking to someone about, God, a year and a half ago now, and they called it data waterboarding. how what restaurateurs are going through. It's probably not the nice, most visual thing you can think of. But like that because of tech and because of everything getting kind of automated, there's a lot more data coming in, but it is absolutely useless, isn't it, unless you do something with it.
Exactly. I mean, data's useless unless you turn it into insight, and insight's nothing without action.
Yeah.
But, you know, this industry, we're very, very keen on going, oh my God, it's data, oh my God, there's just so much going on. We're still 30 years behind our closest sort of relatives in retail and grocery. You know, you look at something like the Tesco Club Card, I will bang on about this all day long, 30 years. It's been capturing data, 30 years it's been generating insight, and 30 years it's been behind every bit of advertising and marketing and brand development that Tesco have ever done. And anybody who's got anything like a Nectar card or a Boots Advantage card, they're all nearly 30 years old.
So smart.
You know, so every other industry has been using data as, you know, the core part of its insight and its communications. And what I'm doing isn't somehow really future, you know, reaching. It's just that, you know, we're about 3 years ahead of everything else. That's it.
It's weird. And in finance, right, you'd always be told start with the data. So any decision making in finance, you're always told start with the data, use your P&Ls, use your prior year, that famous like for like, that famous phrase in the industry. But in marketing, it never was the case. It's so strange.
It is, and I think, do you know what, that I once wrote a piece on this, you won't be surprised to know.
Was it shouty?
It was. I was furious, I won't lie. And it was around the idea that I looked at the top 100 businesses in the world, right? And every single one of them puts marketing and brand front and centre. And hospitality is pretty the only industry that considers marketing to be an expense and not an essential investment. And quite honestly, if you're marketing is an expense in your business, you're not doing it right.
Yeah. I mean, for me, in my little world, everything is marketing.
Yeah.
As in, like we were just talking about brand and stuff before you came in today.
Yeah.
As in, brand is everything. I mean, it's like I'm dead without it.
Your brand's incredible, though. Like, you're, I mean,
clip that one.
Your brand is a really brilliant example of, you look at it and you just think, that is a business that's got its shit together. Your brand, your brand's fantastic.
Oh, thank you, Vic. And that's it. Thanks, Vic, for coming this week. No, love
can
it.
I have that £20 now, please?
Yeah, yeah. We can have it with your specky brew, which you're sipping on there. She's not got a can of specky brew.
Do you know, right, maybe I'm the wrong target market, because I suspect 49-year-old women aren't the target market.
Of liquid
but
death. You
this
do surprise
the
me.
Most baffling brand.
Show
I've
it to this
ever
camera here. Just, where, yeah, it's just, it? Yeah, there. Yeah, there. That's it. Perfect. Yeah.
It's the most baffling brand ever. Liquid death. And it's just a can of water that cost me £4. I tell you, liquid death, because it's death to any money I have, because it's so expensive. But what? I just don't.
I don't know. But I was about to say that actually hospitality brands, are they getting their shit together in terms of marketing being at the centre of the business? Because I worked for Prime Minister for 4 years, and they were very, very... I almost used to complain. I was the only ops person, nearly, and about 25 in marketing, because they were grocery-led, obviously, and they used to spend a lot of money on marketing and brand for Tesco, the people like that. Mm-hmm. And so that was a real eye-opener to me, saying, wow, actually, they think their brand is more important than my knives and forks, you know? And I could not cope with that. I was just like, how is that possible? But because they believe that the reality was that actually, if you have that really strong at the top, you can make some mistakes the other side, but you can get away with it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you F up the brand and the marketing side of things, you're kind of dead in the water.
No, I'm going to be frank. As an industry, we are terrible at marketing. We are terrible. We're obsessed with printing foil logos on tote bags and shit like that. We're not obsessed with ROI. We're not obsessed with proving the incremental benefit of what you're doing. And that's probably why we get so little in the way of funding. And that's why marketers are spread so thinly, because If you're in a team and you're doing all kinds of marketing and you're doing it to a certain degree because you're spread so thinly, you know, imagine the power if you had somebody who was really great at digital or really great at brand or really great at social or something. Yeah. You have a bunch of specialists like many other businesses and many other industries do. You know, you just do some really effective, impactful marketing, and that marketing would become a no-brainer of an investment. And as an industry, I don't think we're great at marketing at all. I think we're obsessed with the wrong things. I think we're obsessed with vanity metrics, absolutely obsessed with vanity metrics, which mean really nothing. They're really nothing. They're just
like followers.
It's like marking your It's like marking your own homework, because that's the thing with hospitality. We're an echo chamber. And you only have to kind of look up and look out at what other industries are doing. And obviously, I look at lots of other industries all the time, and I look what they're doing in terms of their CRM output. The technology and the functionality and the opportunity that exists would blow your mind. Yeah. Like, it would absolutely blow your mind. And then you bring it back to hospitality, and we're going, ooh, you know, what about that? We're just not hitting it in the way we should, and it's a shame, because there's some very capable marketers, some incredible marketers.
And not only are we being wasteful in terms of our money and what we could, the opportunity, but we're probably a bit losing our resource, right? Like you're saying, so some of our great marketers are probably going to industries where they actually get to use those kind of tools.
And prove
their worth.
Very possibly, and
I think, and demonstrating revenue or incremental revenue through what you do or for how you help hostile brand. How easy is that to do? So literally, if I work with Data Hawks tomorrow in Chris's calf, remember Chris's calf? Do you remember it? Pre-pandemic? No, we closed. We're back. If anyone listening, this is an example I used last time. I couldn't think of anything better.
Yes, I remember
it's now a QSR. We've now got kiosks and everything. We're doing really well.
You're selling Liquid Death by the
can. Liquid Death by the can. Tenner ago in Liverpool. They love it. How quickly can you... Because I suppose I speak to lots of loyalty firms. I had Patronix there. Charles from Patronix from Boston. Great guy, and talked lots about how American Airlines were a real great model to follow in terms of using data and the way they develop what they're doing, mm-hmm. and the way they treat him as a customer, for instance, and how he felt about his personalized marketing. And how quickly can we get that? So if I pick you up tomorrow and employ Vic as my, you can work for me, just you, because you're the only one that can handle it. But how quickly can we see some return?
You'll start seeing return really, really quickly. Do you know who said something really brilliant that stuck in my mind the other day? James Coldrew Mobbs, right, from East Coast Concepts. So I was on a panel with him the other day. He said what baffles him is that if somebody did operationally what we do in marketing, you'd be over, right? He said people walk in the door and go, "Hello, I'm here." And if imagine just going, "So?"
And?
Right? "Oh, hi, it's my birthday." "So?"
Yeah.
"Right, I'm off now. Bye." "Yeah, whatever." Like, if you did that, your business would be over, right? Yeah. And yet, digitally, we're doing that every single day. People are signing up to our database. We haven't even got them on the most basic of welcome journeys. People are telling us their birthday. Every single human has a birthday. And, you know, Dan Brookman and Sam Brown used to speak about this all the time. The idea that everybody's got a birthday. And if you're not marketing to people on their birthday, you can guarantee all your competitors are, you know. This is really, really basic stuff. So even just getting that stuff in place, you're going to see an immediate impact. And you know, we see it. We see immediate incremental. It takes like literally a matter of a few weeks.
It's such a no-brainer. Oh, it's probably why you're so busy.
Yeah, well,
I imagine.
But I know. I mean, don't say that out loud too much, because part of me keeps going, how has nobody else worked this out yet? This is an absolute like no-brainer.
But maybe it comes down. I mean, you know better. You were in that chair, right? You were a marketing director, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah. And I think. Is it the way that the business is managed? You talked a little bit about it before, actually, the fact that marketing gets, it's almost, can I say second class? Is that wrong way to say it?
No.
But it gets treated in that vein. And I think back to my ops days, and generally the only thing we knew about marketing was they'd send us boxes of flyers to prop open our office doors with when it's hot in the summer.
Yeah.
That genuinely, and anybody who worked for the Hard Rock Cafe at that time who knows what I'm talking about, Cinco de Mayo, every year we get a box of flyers. And in Cardiff, Cinco de Mayo wasn't that big. So it was difficult to, like, you know, prop the door open with them. But anyway, but it's, do you think it's a top-down approach that, or an exec, a board-level approach that's caused this kind of disconnect?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of things. I think we're an operationally led business, in part because, look, this is one of the greatest industries in the world, in terms of you can do what I did, which is drop out of college in your freshers week. Didn't even make it through freshers week because I got a better offer.
Must have been a good week.
Right? You know, got a better offer. Got told I was like getting a bar manager's job. I'm doing all the hours. So suddenly I've got the keys to the business and I'm running a pub. I'm 18 years old and I'm running a pub, right? And you rise and you graft, because we're grafters, and you work hard and you build relationships and you end up and you're the operations director or whatever it is. This is exactly what I did, exactly what lots of people do. And then in terms of operations, you rise and then suddenly you're the COO or you know, the MD and the CEO. And at no point have you either looked outside hospitality to go, what does happen out there in the big wide world? Or you've kind of got a bit of imposter syndrome, because you think, what if everybody kind of realises I'm actually just a barmaid at heart, you know? So there's a bit of imposter syndrome. Or you're just not interested in marketing, or you're so obsessed with operations, you kind of just see marketing as being colouring in, and, you know, that's the pencils team over there. Give them some new pencils, keep them happy. And they're in the business and they're making all of the big decisions. And then suddenly they're kind of going, well, listen, we won't invest in anything that we can't see a clear return on investment for. But equally, they're not equipping their marketers to deliver a great return on investment, because they're not giving them time, they're not giving them support, they're not giving them agency expertise, they're not doing any of that sort of stuff. So at the end of the year, they said to the marketer, how much money have you made me? And the marketer goes, it's really hard to track it. And
Mother's
suddenly,
Day was good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was quite busy and we got some fabulous open rates. And that means nothing. You know, we got lots of likes on that post of you, sir. Means absolutely fuck all. And then suddenly it's like, well, you know, you didn't really prove a return on investment. We're going to have to cut your budget. And you're like, what? You know?
Yeah, I think it's very, or was very, very difficult to prove what was.
It was. I mean, you know, it was much harder then to prove it than it is now, obviously,
yeah, for
because
sure.
we've got a ton of tech. Do you know what's really interesting? About 6 weeks ago, I happened. Do you remember Theme Magazine?
Yes.
Back in the day, right?
Please don't do that again, because that proves how old we are. But yeah.
Well, it was something my dad gave
me. Yeah, me too.
But yeah,
big fan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I happened across a pile of Theme magazines from 1995. So
wow.
I was 20. I was properly in my ops career, right? And there was this amazing advert in it. And basically, you could phone this firm, and this firm would take a list of all your customers, find out their birthday by going on the electoral register.
My God.
And then basically go around their house and post them an offer and say, come in. And it would have a little code at the bottom. And you, as a
bar
owner...
They're now called Facebook.
pretty much. But, you know, you as a bar owner could look in and go, well, hang on a minute, we spent $1,000 with this outfit, but we've just got 100 of these flyers back, and 100 of these people all spent, you know, £6.50, because that it was the olden days.
Yeah.
And you just put one against the other, and you go, that's a return. So you could always prove a certain amount of return.
Do you remember the bounce? Oh, we used to do little bounce back cards in the little tiny envelope, these like business card style envelopes. We had to pack them all at Christmas time in Whitbread. But I remember in January and February watching them come in going, that works.
No,
but it was all about loyalty, right? And it was about saying thank, like you said before, about saying thank you, but in a way that was personal. But you can still do that digitally.
You can, and actually it's much better now. And I am going to give myself a little plug here. So one of the ways that we prove incrementality is we build control groups. So we challenged ourselves as a business to go, how do we get this past even the most stickler of a CEO in a business? Right? How do we get them to accept that what we've driven has been incremental, and therefore... what you spend with us is an investment and not a cost, right? So we hit upon the idea of control groups. Well, like all scientific experiments, if you've got a bunch of people that are treated in one way and a bunch of people that are treated in the other, you've got a benchmark, right? So when we run a campaign, we will have a control group of people who didn't receive the campaign, and we just look at one against the other.
So cool.
And when we've done it with, I won't say the brands out loud because I haven't asked them previously, but we've worked in brands where we've started maybe with 10 sites out of their 50, and they've said, right, prove the benefit. So we've had a control group that are getting no emails whatsoever. We've got a second control group who are getting just the brand's emails, and then a third group who are getting the brand's emails and our emails, right? Or just our emails. And you look at the conversion rate, and by conversion rate, I'm looking at a booking, something that puts them back in the business. Don't give a shit about stuff like that. I give a shit about, have you put some money in my till? Like, that's what I'm looking for. And so you look at that and you go, the people that didn't get an email, they converted at 1%. The people that got the brand's emails, they converted about 3%. People that get our emails converted about 8%. And this is like typical numbers. And that solves the problem of going, yeah, but it was a really hot day, wasn't it? So people came out anyway. Well, it doesn't matter because your control group didn't behave any differently.
Yeah. The same people had the same weather in the same geography.
Exactly.
Didn't come in.
Exactly. So that's been a game changer for us. And I think that, you know, there are lots of people sending emails out and emails. Big
that's
business,
a smart. But, you're smart. And it's a
you
smart.
You sound surprised.
Well, you know, occasionally.
I get it all the time. I was with a group of really brilliant marketers a few months ago. And one of the questions was, you know, how do you get into the boardroom? Because marketing's the last function. You can. I wrote a piece about this as well, Chris.
Where do we find all these? On the Datahawks website?
We are datahawks.com. Yeah. You will find them. I wrote a piece about when you start up a business, you get an ops person in, you get a people person in, you get a finance person in, and then at some point you get a marketing person in, and then you get a person in who you're going to just tell them how they should do the job, and then you're going to blame them for everything that goes wrong and the fact that marketing's shit, and then you're going to sack them again and go through this cycle.
I'm only laughing because I've seen it, but
you'll go through the same cycle until we're all dead sort of thing. So I was kind of sort of saying, how do you get in the boardroom? Tell me what the metrics are that your leaders are asking for. And without a fail, every single one of them said the size of the database. And I'm just like, but they must want to know about, like, you know, how it's converting. They don't give a shit.
Who's in it?
They don't care. They just want to know how big the database is, because that's something that you can, you know, whack around and kind of wave around in when you're chatting over, you know, with your mates. But that's the stuff that comes out. But you've got to start with what are your objectives, okay? So one of your objectives might be, this is a brand piece. This is a brand thing. This is an awareness thing. This is an education piece. Absolutely brilliant. What are the metrics attached to that? If this is a growth piece, if this is about driving frequency or driving spend, then how do you prove success? Who should you be talking to about what to get, compel them to take
and
action?
Can we budget it? Imagine the power of that, being able to budget marketing campaigns.
Well, you can, because it becomes really predictable. It becomes that revenue, that incremental revenue, becomes so predictable. We love sending reports out every month.
Like, bet you do.
It's like,
because imagine dropping Datahawks and you've got your like for like, right? And you're looking at last year when you're working with Datahawks, and you look at this year, you're like, oh, we got a bit of a hole.
Oh, do you know what? 100%. And it's why we've got 99% client retention for this
doing
year.
It for you as well.
99% client retention for this year, because it's predictable. And I got sent an email from a CEO about 6 months ago, and it said, Jesus God, this works, and we can see it in our sales. Because you can. We can see that people that aren't getting the emails aren't behaving in the same
way. That's going on the website.
It's incremental. Yeah, I know. Exactly.
And one of the reasons you came to see me today, apart from the fact you love me and you miss me, is the fact that you have a new performance model. Is that how am I saying the right words?
Yeah.
Tell everyone all about it. Especially Glenda's listening and she wants to know.
Well, Glenda will be very proud.
Glenda looks after Vic's marketing, by the way, if you're wondering who she is.
Glenda's basically my counsellor, coach, and emotional support human, and does marketing in the times that she has available. Because basically my relationship with Glenda is, we have a meeting every Wednesday morning and I just sit and cry for about an hour.
Brilliant.
and then she tells me it's all going to be okay and we crack on. So,
would you mind checking this, Vic, while you're here?
Exactly. You couldn't just sign this off while you're here. Massive love to Glenda. So it occurred to me, right, because I'm nothing if not innovative, Chris.
Yes.
It occurred to me that we really understand the concept of paid and organic when it comes to social, right? So by organic, for your listeners who don't know, I'm talking about the stuff that, you know, if you're in BrewDog now and you've got the keys to their social media platforms, there's nothing to stop you posting a picture or go out to your entire audience of, I don't know, look what's going on in our booth.
Vic Searle is in the podcast studio.
Something like
join
that.
Join us now.
Yeah. Yeah, low number of likes because no one will care. But that goes out to everybody. But they will have an agency that's doing really super targeted social that's designed to convert. It's all based on, you know, what are the objectives, what are the completed sort of like bookings, yeah. You know, and it will be really, really super sort of targeted going on in the background. Same thing for search. You know, you can build your own sort of SEO into your website. You can mess around with your Google My Business, all of that sort of stuff. I'm not sure even if that stuff still exists. It moves so fast. But you've probably got a search agency who's doing all your pay-per-clicks, and it's all highly targeted, really driven, like tiny audiences, and it's designed to convert, right? But that doesn't exist for email. And as an industry, everybody can do an email, can't they? How hard can it be, right?
It's easy, Vic.
Just piss easy, right? So what I decided to do was split it out and go, okay, you've got organic email, goes to your whole base, it's brand stuff, it's exciting, it's lovely, it's, you know, everybody enjoys reading it, not necessarily designed to drive a specific action. But we've also got this new performance way of marketing that is really super targeted. So if there are 73 people in your database that drink red wine, eat pies, and haven't been in 32 days, and usually come in every 30 days,
it's me.
They're going to call Chris. They are going to receive an email from us, and it will be so super targeted, it will convert at a much higher rate than all of the brand stuff. And exactly like performance marketing, we charge a very low sort of like monthly rate, but we'll take a percentage of the incremental that we drive for you. So it makes it so easy to jump on board with it, because you haven't got that barrier of going, listen, you know, that Data Hawks woman's everywhere, but I don't know whether I want to give you a few grand a month to manage my emails. That we've both got skin in the game. I don't make any money unless you make any money as a brand.
I love that.
You know, really, really targeted, really accessible, you know, really egalitarian. Everybody can do it. But make no mistake, you will be writing me a nice big check, because we make a ton of incremental revenue. So we're so confident that we can do it now. We've been doing this for 2 years sort of solidly. We're so confident we can do it. And we've got this way of proving incremental benefit that gets past the toughest of CFOs, that we're just like, let's do it. Let's put
Because you're also taking the decision-making process out of it in a way, because it's so low cost to entry. And then obviously the risk for them is that they do well.
Yeah, exactly.
What a shit risk to have.
Oh, I'm having to pay Data Hawks loads of money as a percentage of all the extra money.
Yeah, because you've just made a load of money, yeah.
Exactly, and that's the thing. You're not even paying up front. You're paying after the event, because we're going to send you a bill for what we've just made you. And it's a different way of running an agency, because, you know, when you're running an agency, it's like you sign a retainer for 12 months, and what we all do is we sit down and we go, right, let's have a nice meet, and we'll all eat our biscuits together on a call and have a chat, you know, and you're like... And me and my hawks are just like, want to make the money. Like, they're desperate to kind of get going. And instead, it's like takes 3 or 6 months to build that momentum. This way, we're going to go, make no mistake, we're not making money unless you're making money. So we are going to be like,
we're on it.
We're hitting it. We're going to be sending emails out. And exactly like that paid and organic stuff, it's not going to stop anybody in your brand sending out whole base emails and beautiful bits of brand stuff, but we've turned your database into a performance channel.
Yeah, like you're the money makers, right?
Exactly. We basically created a new category of marketing.
Well, they talk about restaurant businesses being omnichannel now. That actually fits into another revenue stream, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you have your delivery, you have, I can't think of it now, takeaway, drive-through, Vic. Yeah. No, but it's true though, isn't it? Because what you've done is you've taken something that was just a function, which was an important function and people were doing, but let's be honest, potentially a tick box exercise to say, we've sent the email boss, it's gone out.
Oh,
you know, we've had 45%, you know, our open rate's gone up from 9% to 10%.
Yeah.
Look, killing it.
Exactly. You know?
But now it's like, okay, let's take Vic out of that little channel. Let's put her on the P&L and go, actually, what did Data Hawks do this month? Or, you know, what did email marketing do this month? Because that's insane, right? I'm literally visually looking at a P&L in my head now.
Yeah.
All the different lines. Because when I was an operator, I used to obsess with finding new... I was also innovative. Also, just trying to find ways of doing things, but doing them better and doing them differently.
Yeah.
But getting a new channel, oh my God, that's like the holy grail, right?
Well, it is. It's a new channel. And I guess the way you've got to think of it is, you know, having a CRM system and having a pot of data, right? That's the cost of doing business. You have to have that to compete, right? That's a bare minimum, right? But what we're saying is don't just kind of compete. You know, use that channel to win.
Yeah, you don't need 45,000. You can have 8,000, right? And be really targeted on that 8,000. Even that 1,000 within that 8,000, right?
Yeah.
Might be your real value.
Yeah. And I think as businesses, we've got to be a bit more realistic as well about. So we're just about to release a thing that we've been working on. So we do these insights reports and we've done them with absolute shed load of brands now. So we've got a really nice sample. And what we see is I don't think there's been a single brand that hasn't followed this trend. But it's something like the average is 89%. 89% of your database are visiting no more than twice a year, right? So your frequency is not anywhere near you think it is. You know, you've got a bunch of people sitting on your database. They've just signed up for something. You've never seen them. Your frequency is really low. You've got more lapsing people than you would imagine. So our job is to come in and go, well, we know this because we're using data to get those insights. So we know exactly who to talk to. We know exactly what to talk to them about or how to talk to them, because if somebody was in last week, we're going to talk to them in a very different way from somebody was in that, 3 months ago.
Yeah, because if I'm coming twice a year, I don't want to hear from Vic on a daily basis, right?
No, of course not. Right?
But if I'm coming weekly, let me know.
Exactly. So we're dialing up and dialing down. We're using all these different levers, knowing that we're going to send really impactful comms that is going to drive the action that we want to see. And we're also running these control groups so we can go, well, listen, we got this segment, let's say, of people we're going to approach. We held 10% of them back. They converted at 1%. Our people converted at 9% or 6% or 15% or whatever it is. And the difference is incremental. And we're talking about, for some, you know, you can find this on the website, but one casual brand, 40 sites, average spend of about £18. We talk about driving, I think it's 144,000 of incremental every month, like month in, month out. That's a really conservative number because that particular brand, we're counting a proof of presence as one person. They know that their average table size is 2.6. Yeah. So actually, you can nearly treble that number. And that is month
so
in.
So they had that 144, that was zero. Or not. Or they might have got lucky, right, with a full database email and got a load of people in, right, potentially. But that consistency of revenue wasn't particularly there prior to working with you.
No, but that's incremental. Because
so it's like, yeah, on top, yeah.
That's against the people who aren't receiving emails. And also, previously, we'd done various tests where we were able to go, these are the people that aren't getting emails, these are the people that are getting your emails, these are the people that get our emails. But there's not a single client that our emails
that is Cardiff-based sales in Carluccio's for a month.
Right.
That's how much we were doing a month.
And sorry,
Cardiff Bay people.
That to a brand, that's the difference between that is
closure. And opening and closure. I was about to ask about. I mean, talk about the industry generally, actually, and kind of the mess we find ourselves in. And you know, again, not from lots of external factors. The C word, not the one you're thinking of, the COVID. but all of the lots of negativity and lots of bad stuff, you know, the world is facing, actually, not just the industry. It's pretty crappy out there right now.
But
it's invaluable, right? My mind is blown, Vic. Like, I should read your website more.
You should.
Maybe before even this podcast.
Even just answer your WhatsApps now and again. I don't really, you know, be a star. Do you know what it is? What we've created at Datahawks is something I'm incredibly proud of it.
You should be.
We've
amazing.
Got a strategy day tomorrow. Our next moves are going to be. I just think this industry is going to just start going, Jesus Christ, what will they come out with next? Sort of thing. Because the thinking we are.
But you want to be ahead, don't you? Like your whole nature, I know, because I feel it. Similarly, like you kind of put something in place, it works. You're like, right, go again.
Next. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's coming next?
Cause it's really unhealthy, but really healthy for business.
Exactly. I mean, it's the ADHD way, I think.
Yeah, it really is. It's really unhealthy for you, but for your business, it's a goldmine.
Everybody else is getting it. But as much as I kind of, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm like, you know, bigging up the business and the incredible hawks that work within it. I mean, this is an incredible bunch of people. They are like living, breathing email, you know, ROI like results. They're like absolute insane. But this business started because I wanted to do something for hospitality.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking around and I was like, this is my 31st year in hospitality. You know, it's an industry I love.
High-fiving you from over here.
It's an industry I love. It's an industry I watch being absolutely decimated on the daily with shit decisions at government basis. Every headwind, you could possibly imagine. It is hard to do business in hospitality.
It's insane.
You know, that even just really macro stuff, like the world has changed, people have changed, like their behaviours have changed.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Flight Club in Cardiff, went out for dinner at Gaucho in Cardiff. Look at Cardiff, hey, Gaucho.
I know.
so I went to Gaucho in Cardiff, we went to Flight Club afterwards and had to play two Man United fans who really bullied me actually for the whole thing. But anyway, the capex, the expense, the effort put into that venue in Cardiff, it's insane. You walk in, it's very small on the ground floor, and then it grows into this huge, beautiful upstairs terrace that looks over. It's stunning.
Yeah.
My friends who are with me who don't know the industry, don't only eat in it, said this place must have cost a fortune to build. I was like, well, they got loads of them. I said, this is like, and they're amazing. But yeah, there was what, 30 people in there, maybe? It's a Cardiff on a Tuesday night or whatever, but it was so, you know, hard. But it just, you're just like, ah, so annoying. And you know, sometimes you think, are we spreading ourselves too thin, or is the experiential side of what we're doing now, is that going to be, well, look where we are today with a slide next to us and a bowling alley the other side.
I know.
Is that the way forward? But I don't know, but same as Gaucho. Gaucho was probably five or six tables, again, Tuesday lunchtime at that point. Mm. But service, food, amazing. Like, Cardiff people will love it, but is there enough of them?
do you know what, though? I think we have got to take some responsibility for our own state as well, because... And I say this, you know, knowing that I say it quite often, but if you have got a database full of people and you are not sweating that asset, that's the biggest asset in your business. It's probably bigger than your brand, actually. Nobody gives a shit about brand, you know.
You just told me mine was really good. You tell me no one cares.
But customers don't sit there and go, I'm going to go to X brand because it's so this and it's a hearty place to have a warm... They don't think like that. How do you make them feel? How does the brand make them feel? That's what they're looking for. But they've given you their data. You've spent time. You've built this data. If you're not sweating that asset, your biggest asset, because it's people you can talk to whenever you want because you own that data. And if you can't look in that data and know who your most valuable customers are, who's deserting you, if you can't have any, you know, if you don't know any of that sort of stuff, then that is negligent, you know?
Yeah.
It is. And I think that we've got to be really honest about... This industry, this is tough times. Like, it has never been tougher for this industry. No. So you and I, we've been around.
It's one of the reasons I'm out of it.
Years,
like, Jenny, it's one of the reasons I don't operate anymore, because I had three kids and I couldn't do it. I literally couldn't cope with the pressure of operating in, and not because my people are always awesome, right? It was all to do with the environment. It was all to do with the lack of customers or lack of or pricing. You pick one.
It's everything though, and you know, you and I have been around for about 300 years now. It's 250. We've never seen anything like this, right? We've got to be honest. We've never seen anything like this. But we've also got to pair that with, we've never had as much to go at. We've never had technology like we've got now. We've never had data like we've never had insight. We've never had understanding. So I think as an industry, we've got to stop going on about it's hard, and go, it's changed, right? And move forward something else. Yeah. Because and the answer's there in many ways.
It's weird. And we do a tech stack light, we call it. We do this like visual tech stack review for people where we just do a one page and we just put from all the way from your Sage payroll through to your, you know, your online ordering, whatever. And weirdly, we always put the pause in the middle, right? When we draw it on mirror board, we put pause in the middle of that. And the more you're talking, the more I'm thinking, is pause the heartbeat of the restaurant, of a restaurant tech stack, or is it CRM, right? Because when you, and this is, I'm not lying, when I draw it, marketing's over here, Vic. You're going to kill me. I'm going to show you one after this.
I am going to kill you.
Yeah, so marketing is almost like an offshoot to the right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh, my guys were listening to me. Right. Yeah, why'd you do that?
CRM is the center, right? CRM has to sit at the center because it's the closest you can get to your customers, right? In the same way is, I can't go around here now and speak to every single person in this business and go, how often do you visit? What do you buy? Why do you visit? Who'd you come with? When were you last here? What drink did you buy? How much do you spend? You can't go and do that. So you have to look to your data that tells you the answers to that. Your CRM is as close to your customer as you are ever going to get. It tells you what they're buying. It tells you how they're behaving. It tells you their frequency. It tells you their spend. You know, if you're collecting the right data, it will tell you the mindset and motivation behind that visit. So that sits at the center. All of the other parts feeding in to that CRM. And then we've got a slide in our deck. If you think of your CRM as being like a really sophisticated machine and it's capable of doing really incredible stuff and producing really incredible stuff, but its output is only as good as its input.
Yeah.
And it needs fuel, it needs data, it needs insight, it needs opted-in data, it needs behavioural data, it needs demographic data, it needs psychographic data, it needs fuel, and it needs materials, right? It needs different copy and different creative and different rewards and different calls to action and different subject lines. And it needs an objective. Like, you can't just switch on a machine and it just starts, you know, pumping stuff out. You've got to tell it what it's making. What's it designed to make? Is it a brand piece? Is it one more visit? Is it bring you back from the brink of lapse? You know, whatever it is. Is it a birthday thing? And, you know, like all good machines, even the one that makes the Vianetta, because that's the best machine I've ever seen in my life.
I could watch that for hours. Why do you talk about that? How do I know about that?
Probably because I talk about it a lot. Like,
I've seen it on... It was on...
Inside the Factory, my favourite show.
That's, it just was our last podcast.
Yeah.
I'm just going to take the last one and just
release it. But even that wavy Vianetta.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That does all that. There is still somebody standing there in a white coat and a hairnet twiddling stuff. Yeah. They're making sure the fuel's right. It's making sure the materials are right, making sure the objectives are on track, the quality's good. And they're doing all that. And that's your CRM, and it needs to sit
in. And I think on that note, factory processes actually. Is something I think the industry never... You look at QSR, and QSR seem to be the ones that are actually coming out of the mess at the moment. There seems to be more of them, right? Yeah. Which shows people put more money in those areas. And because they are quite factory process driven and they are very efficient and there's not a lot of waste anywhere.
Yeah.
And when we used to make pies at Pie Minister, 160,000 pies a week, there used to be a little man at the end of the pie line that used to capture the paste... Almost like waste pastry. Thank you. That's in the edit. There used to be a guy at the end of the line who used to catch the waste pastry, and then they turned that into another product. It was insane, right? But those processes, I think, we really lack. We're quite slack. We're like a slightly middle-aged, overweight.
We're flabby.
Yeah, we're really flabby.
Honestly, we're so flabby.
Because we're quite reactive, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah.
And your database is a perfect example of this. At a CRM, you spend a decent chunk of money on getting your CRM. You spend all your time trying to get people to sign up to it, and then you sit there and you go, I'm just going to send you an email once a fortnight, and it'll be a load of stuff I want to tell you that you're not probably interested in either way, but I'm going to tell you that this is what you should be doing. It's just so wasteful. Do you know what? It comes down to that expertise, right? So if you're going to manage it in-house, you're going to get to a certain level because you're pulled in 67 different directions, right? I know when I was a marketing director, I had... The CEO on one shoulder shouting about something, God knows what, didn't listen to him anyway. Had the ops director on the other shoulder kind of, I need posters for my toilet doors, I need table talkers, Vic.
I hate those frames.
And all of that sort of stuff. Where my snap frames are empty, Vic, and I'd be just like...
There's a snap frame with a missing...
I'm haunted by them, I'm triggered by them when I see an empty snap frame.
Pubs do better.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I'd be sitting there and I'd be like, shit, I've got to get an email out, because that's what you do when you're a marketer. And I would literally log into my CRM and I'd think, not today, Vic. Not today.
Send.
And at best, I'd just get one out to the whole base that says something like,
big picture of a baby
totally
or a dog.
Here. It's great. Oh, the menu. Send. God, thank Christ that's done. And even if you're really great at this, you can only get into it so deep. Where what you do is you're supposed to bring in an expert who can do it, who knows the tricks, who's spent years learning it, who knows best practice, has done a bunch of testing. But there's no point bringing in a expert if you're then going to go, what I want you to do is, because that's just,
there's a really
no
funny
point,
meme. With a really funny meme my designer sent me, and it's a girl rolling pastry, and it says above her head, designer. And then it's got client next to her, and she keeps pointing, saying, no, no. And then the designer just passes the ball to the lady, and she accidentally flips the chopping board, and all the flour goes in her face, and the designer just goes and just drags it back to herself again. It's just so true, right? Yeah, we can't let it go. Because general manager is the worst term we've ever given anyone in this business, because that's what we are.
Yeah.
We are in charge of everything but nothing. And we're quite, 100%. Most of us are the best ones, quite good at like a level of a 7 out of 10 on most levels, but you need the 10s, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I'll have to be quick because I'm going to run out of time, but with hotels, they have a line on their budget, I found out, for consultants.
Right.
So they actually budget for consults.
Yeah,
for expertise, right? For people to come in who really, especially on technology, that's why I found out about it. And
But with restaurants and working with consultants or agencies or whatever term you want to use, I know that when we were back in the day, when I was back in, we were very resistant of that because they weren't our people. How would they know our brand? Yeah. Would they break us? What, you know, all yeah. this back? How can we pay them money? We've got to pay for this KP for 60 hours a week for standing there cleaning four plates, you know, so, yeah. rather than the chef doing it while he's picking his nose around the corner, you know. So it's just mad. And do you think that's changing? As in, are you, you're proving yourself, which I presume is making it change.
Yeah, I think we're kind of changing it from within. But it's really interesting when you use that example, because the kind of thing that we say all the time in the business is, you know brand, we know this channel, right? So you're going to tell us everything you know about your brand. You're going to, you know, tell us what's important to you. You're going to tell us what you want to talk about. You're going to give us your overarching calendar because you know brand. But we know this channel. And we're going to take your brand and your comms and everything that's important to you and everything you want to say, and we are going to translate that into a way that's going to hit the people and resonate in the way that's going to compel them to take action and go, I am booking a table there, I am going to go down there tonight, or whatever it is. So I think we've got to move past this idea of when an agency comes in, whoever it is, we're going to tell them what we want from them, and then we're going to get really annoyed when they challenge us, yeah. and then we're going to say they're...
Or they don't challenge and end up...
Exactly, because, you know, the churning. Agency yeah. can't win, yeah. and then if it'll all just go to like a complete mess, and then it's like, oh, it's a shit agency, let's just get a new agency, and the cycle starts again. Why don't we start going, listen, we know our brand, but you know the channel, yeah. you know, and when we put that together, you know, we're going to help you achieve some incredible stuff with this, but you've got to let us work, because we are experts at it, we're proven, we do this day in, day out. You as a brand manager, you maybe send like two emails, you know, a month, three emails yeah. a month, right? Our hawks are sending millions and millions of emails every week.
They're
millions
definitely better than me.
Emails. So I think they're a bit better than you, Chris.
I think my son is better than me at MailChimp. I can't. It's the one
Does
thing.
Does he
I,
need a job? Because I'm hiring, right?
Do you know what? He's working at Next at the moment. Is he's folding, recovering clothes, he calls it. He folds clothes. But no, he's doing his A-levels on his way to sports. Science
read. Well, if the sports doesn't work out.
Yeah, yeah, he's seriously manager of Liverpool by 25, he said. So on Fair. That note, yeah, that's his aim. Yeah, everyone needs a goal. you never know. 25's
good on him.
Short time.
He needs him at Newcastle. Tell him to pop over.
Oh, he'd look. Well, anyway, he'd yeah, obsessed with football. But so you are hiring, which we should talk about very quickly. So yeah. Who are you looking for?
We need account managers and senior account managers. So business is booming, as you would expect. We've got an absolutely fantastic bunch of hawks who are making a ton of incremental money for their clients. So we're looking for people to manage end-to-end accounts. So they've got to be able to take the insights from the data. We've got an insights team, so they don't have to do, you know, too yeah. much in the way of, you know, data analysis or interrogation themselves. And then they're going to take that and they're going to align that with their clients, you know, overarching calendar and objectives. And they're going to turn that into really beautiful communications, highly targeted, emotionally compelling, persuasive copy. They're going to write the emails, they're going to build the emails. And then once a month, they're going to send a beautiful email that details how much cash we've made for that client. And then we're all going to pat each other on the back and go,
love
aren't
that.
We great?
And I saw in the WhatsApp group, there's a really nice benefit that you provide. I don't know if you probably didn't want to talk about it, but I'm going to make you. But I saw it was really cool what you were talking about, the fact that you... I'm not going to say counselling. It's not that, is it?
It's a coach.
It's a coach, yeah.
Yeah, so Maisie... Shout out to Maisie. She's also one of my emotional support humans. Maisie helps me remember who I am when I forget, right? So
those people are important.
Know, hugely important. When yeah. I'm sitting there going, I can't do this, and the imposter syndrome has struck, that's I just think I can't
I've
get
met
past
Maisie.
It.
Yes, we were going to do...
Yes, you have. You had a call
Anyway, sorry.
Absolutely wonderful. And I go to Maisie and she slaps me around the face a few times and goes, yes, you can, go back out and do it. And I do. And she's been a huge part of DataHawks. And one of the many benefits of working at DataHawks is I really believe that, you know, there's a close connection with what goes on personally, with what goes on professionally.
For sure.
And things can press buttons and people have confidence barriers to get over and people want to grow, but sometimes it's not as easy as just going, well, then just grow. And so every month the team get a session with Maisie that, you know, obviously I pay for it. I don't pay for it themselves. They get a session with Maisie and she just helps them just grow and develop and ask the right questions and come back and challenge
so cool.
me and, you know,
such
go,
a new way,
such
yeah. a good way, you know, because as well, the reality is no one's in an office anymore, right? No one's really sitting together. Just a way to be able to give someone that kind of,
Because that's the one thing I think people miss from the office, potentially being able to have that confidant or someone who's not in their team, potentially someone they can talk to. But you've gone up a level and you've actually got a coach looking after them. But I just think it's a really nice thing to do. And I saw it and I thought, oh, that's nice.
It is. And do you know what? We're all very honest as a group about the benefit we get. So there's no sort of like embarrassment or anything about, I'm seeing, you know, Maisie, whatever. I'm the first person to go, I can't get past this thing. I don't know how to deal with that. I'm going to take myself off and have an hour with Maisie. And I come back and I'm like, I've sold.
0898 Maisie.
Exactly. Yeah, I've got her on speed
for the
dial.
Kids, that's an old dialing tone.
Yeah, quite a pricey one, as I recall.
Why was 999 that way on the dialer phone? You're dying and it takes ages for the nine to come back.
I know the person's nearly dead by the time we got to the second nine. But
anyway,
but yeah,
it's one for the kids.
Maisie's there. Maisie's there. And she does an incredible job. And she's helping us all grow. And she's helping us all sort of, you know, push past stuff. And you know what? I think it's just very indicative of the culture we have at DataHawks. I've worked in some toxic places. Like, I will have no problem saying this out loud on a podcast.
I've heard you say this before.
I have worked in some fucking toxic places for some fucking toxic people, right? And I will never put my team through that.
I think that's where we learn in life, right? That you kind of go through phases where you learn not what to do. I had a particular boss at one point who actually really respected because of, I'm not going to say even her gender. Oh, I really respected her as a professional, actually, but the way she dealt with some people was tough, right? And it was hard to watch. But you learn very quickly what not to do and what to do as you grow up a bit. If anyone wants to apply to you to work for you and not me, because I'm talking about weird things, how do they get hold of you? Where do they apply?
Find me on LinkedIn and drop me a note. We've got the guys at 68 People. Are doing a bunch of recruitment for us, and you know they're brilliant. They found us some absolutely fantastic hawks. But you know, message them or message me on LinkedIn, and I'll send you a spec. We're looking for account managers and senior account managers. Loads of benefits. We've got a share scheme. We've got all sorts of great stuff going on. But
I might apply.
I mean, I might. Yeah, it sounds.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Being a founder sucks.
Yeah, it's really shit. So I might apply to be a hawk, but. But yeah, come join us, because the business is just going to go from, you know, strength to strength. We're growing at pace. We're doing such exciting things, and
I think it's amazing, right? And we met Vic probably before the pandemic, actually. But it was just starting to get to know you then, and it was just you. I remember you sitting in your kitchen on a stool on a Zoom call with us, talking about DataHawks and what you were going to do. I don't even think it was called DataHawks at that point. I think it was just.
Maybe
I'm going to do something.
Data Pigeons, I think.
I think it's ace. So, go and check out the website. It's wearedatahawks.com. And you can find Vic coming out on the airwaves on Spotify. Where else? We're going to release on YouTube, Spotify, Apple. You'll be on all the channels.
Well, she told me that at the start.
You've got your Specky Brew. You'll be fine.
I could have got a sponsorship deal with you.
Yeah, don't worry. Well, look, you're already sponsored my podcast anyway by the sound of it, because that's all everyone talks about. But really great to hear from you. I think the new performance model sounds amazing. Obviously, my most favourite thing today is finding out that basically you've built a new channel on a restaurant P&L, which is insane. Kudos to you. That hasn't happened in 200 years. So well done. And we shall see you soon.
Thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure to come and speak to you.
Love my pleasure is all mine. You said nice things about the brand. You can come on as much as you want.
See you in the WhatsApp group. Message
see you there.
Me. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.